Cunha.
Welcome to Expat Hoops. I'm Tony Budney alongside Andy Hoverman. Tonight, we have a very special guest, the first journalist to appear on the program. He's currently an English language Korean baseball organization writer for Yonhap News and has previously covered the Korean Basketball League. It's Jiho Yu. Welcome to the pod.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for joining us. We have had a pretty extensive conversation through Twitter DMs, and so finally getting to sit down with you and kind of share this with our listeners is exciting here. So I'm going to kind of piggyback off of what our conversation was. We had an interesting discussion about what the, I guess, for lack of a better term, totem pole of Korean sports are. If you could kind of let us know, you know, what in South Korea is kind of viewed as the more popular sports and breaking it down probably into the lesser popular sports.
Yeah, sure. You know, I think I used the word totem pole in our conversation.
And I thought it was a great description. So I stole it.
You know, if you're talking about the professional leagues, the KBO, the baseball league, is number one by far. If you look at the TV ratings, online streaming numbers, attendance in the pre-COVID days when people were actually able to go to games, it was number one by far. And then I would think that women's volleyball is up there number two. Some of the playoff games in women's volleyball would actually outdraw regular season KBO baseball games. And women's volleyball has really come on strong in recent years. And then, you know, I mentioned specifically professional league, but if you're just talking about sports, I think national team soccer is probably number one or two. If you sort of go by the TV ratings in a given year, in a normal non-COVID years, national team friendly matches or World Cup qualifiers and all that, they would be in the top 10, top five every year, not just sports, but every, you know, TV event. You talk about soap operas and whatnot, national team soccer matches up there. But the domestic league, not so much. It's not as big as national team action there. So I would put men's soccer league probably behind women's volleyball. And then after that, it's probably a crapshoot after that. Men's volleyball, maybe. Women's golf. Of course, Korean golfers thriving on the US LPGA, but Korean LPGA tour is pretty big too. Bigger purse and more tournaments than the men's tour in Korea. So that's a big event. And then I think basketball, men's and women's leagues, they're both, I think they're near the bottom of the so-called the totem pole in Korean sports. Their popularity has really taken a beating in recent years. You know, basketball wasn't always like that. It was back when I was growing up watching sports as a sports fan in the late 80s and early 90s. You know, it was baseball in the summer and basketball in the winter. And it was on national TV. This is a little before the professional KBL days. This is when we had like semi-pro teams and collegiate teams competing against each other in national tournaments every year. And, you know, they got primetime hours or Saturday afternoon, Sunday afternoon games on national TV. And they would pack, you know, 25,000, 30,000 people in the nation's capital for those, some of the big ticket games. And some of those stars went on to become pros in the early days of KBL. And the KBL was able to kind of, you know, piggyback on the popularity of semi-pro days. And then, you know, it was thriving in the early days of the KBL, late 90s, early 2000s even. And then, I don't know, I think the talent, the sort of the pipeline kind of dried up. And then, you know, of course, we had the infusion of foreign players and who would kind of come and dominate, you know, basketball being the game what it is. You can, you know, all you need is maybe one good guy kind of having surrounding with four different complementary pieces and you can win some games. And it kind of turned into, send the ball into the low post and see what happens. It became kind of like, give the ball to your foreign guy in the post and then four guys kind of standing around. So the game got, you know, a little less entertaining, I would think, over the years. And I think that's what has contributed to sort of the declining popularity of the KBL, just to kind of give you the big picture thing.
Yeah, that's absolutely. And it's kind of interesting too, because we've talked with a couple of guests before. Shaq McKissick and Delroy James have both played in the KBL at different times. Shaq, I think, was back in 2016. Delroy, I think, was as recent as 2019, 2020. And we also talked about this in our messages as well, that, you know, the pay in the KBL is still really good. So I think you kind of alluded to some of it in terms of the pipeline drying up, but do you think that there's any other issues either with the KBL or the women's, the WKBL for what the decline has been for the league in terms of relevance?
Yeah, you know, I touched upon the talent and the local talent especially. And I think KBL once made a kind of a farce of themselves when, I think it was a couple of years back when they limited the heights of foreign players coming in. So they would literally bring foreign players into their league office and measure their height. So if they're over the certain restriction, I think it was something like 200 meters, 200 centimeters, which is about, I don't know, six five-ish. So if you're taller than that, you could play. And that was designed to encourage less reliance on foreign bigs and more, and it was designed to open the doors for more homegrown perimeter players to thrive. And obviously it backfired, didn't work. So I think they went right back to not having any restriction the following season. So it just kind of goes to show you how or what the league or some of the fan base think of the foreign player presence. On the one hand, you know, obviously if you have two good foreign players, they will help you win games. But in the long term, what does it do to the development of, you know, homegrown talent? Like they will be, you know, highly touted center power forward prospects coming out of Korean high school or Korean university college. They get to the pro, you know, they're blocked by former NBA draft picks or former Division I players. So they're going to have to switch positions. Some of them have made successful transition. I've known of, you know, former collegiate centers who came to the KBL, became stretch four, kind of, you know, corner three and D kind of forwards in the KBL. But not every guy has succeeded in that kind of transition. So, you know, they get kind of caught in between. You know, they've been playing center, you know, low post position all their lives, and they come to the pro, they have to find a new position to play, and they're not maybe athletic enough to play three or four. They're too small to play the five in this league now. So, you know, that has been the problem in this league, I think, for many years.
That's pretty interesting. I know that a number of players, and there were a couple of guys that were on the podcast that played multiple years in the KBL, but there are also a couple of people that dabbled in it that played in like a year and were there for a short period of time. And one thing that they always said is that everybody seemed to enjoy their time there. The benefits for them were good. The atmosphere, they said, was pretty good. And the competition was what they characterized is not elite like some European leagues like Spain or Italy or anything like that. But it wasn't, you know, there wasn't a cream puff league by any stretch of the description. There was a lot of good competition, and they felt challenged in the leagues that they were in. And when we talk about the benefits that the players receive in the league, do you think that there is a bit of unfairness there too, with foreign players coming in getting more incentivized than some players that are as part of the up and coming high schoolers, collegiate players, like you said, already being in the country? Do you think that's a problem as well?
Well, I mean, it's the case in every other league, in every other sport that hires or brings in foreign players. KBO, the K-League, KBL, same thing. I mean, those guys are really essentially hired guns, right? They're getting paid a lot of money. They get a lot of benefits.
Mercenaries, because, in a sense.
Yeah, mercenaries. Yep. And they're, you know, they're expected to deliver wins and championships. And that's why they get paid so much money. And on the flip side of that, they're also on a shorter leash, like in baseball too. Hey, you can have your major league credentials, but if you're not hitting 300 by the end of the first month, you may be gone. KBL, yeah. I think the teams are kind of doing the same thing, right? If you're not averaging double-double, if you're not averaging 20 and 10, you could be gone by the, you know, before the All-Star break or something like that. So, you know, they're under a lot of pressure to perform right away, to do it on a short leash, and, you know, kind of have the short runway in terms of, you know, getting used to the new country, new surroundings, and new league and new competition. And, you know, not to mention all the language barrier and all the things that comes off the field. And so I don't, you know, I don't personally have a problems with the guys that are coming here and getting a lot of money.
Yeah, we actually, it's related to what we were talking about with Fowler and Campbell in our most recent interview, him going to Italy and the pressures that he had. Because
Porter talked about it on Monday.
Yeah, Porter talked about it too. This is something that a lot of guys get, because when you're a foreign player in a lot of leagues, you're expected to be basically one of the best, if not the best player on the
team.
And in an Italian league, in a Spanish league, especially for them, that's not an easy thing to do, even on some of the quote unquote lesser teams that are still part of the top tier. You have to really, really play well. And these are guys that didn't necessarily have a lot of NBA aspirations, NBA looks, but they were certainly among an elite tier of players in Division One. They were guys that were played well for their own teams, and they got to look for a reason. But you go there and you're playing a lot of guys like yourself, the level of competition is definitely elevated.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. Obviously, Spain and Italy, you're talking about really competitive leagues, and it's not that easy for even Division One talent to just go up there and start dominating. But it's a little different than KBL. I mean, if you have, look at guys like Jerry Solinger, he just scored, I think, 36 points in a playoff game the other day. He could just come in and dominate like that. You know, he's got pretty strong NBA credentials compared to some of the other guys that have played in the KBL. So, you know, someone like that can just come in and play. And I think the scheduling, when I was covering the KBL, this is back in 2007-ish, 2008-ish. And I remember talking to the guys who had come over from Philippines or maybe China. And they're talking about how the schedule is a little tighter here, a little more, maybe a few more games per week. 54 games in a sort of a tighter calendar, but, you know, it's kind of worth it because they get paid a lot of money and they get a lot of benefits. You know, their family members can come over and visit. They would get like first class, you know, round trip tickets, and they get put up in a nice hotel downtown and that kind of thing. So, yeah, they were taken care of. And, you know, there were times when teams had some entitled people playing in this league. They're kind of running into trouble off the field, getting into some legal issues. But I don't think we've had that problem in recent years.
One thing that's a bit different about KBL, I guess, than KBO, because we experienced last year the KBO during the pandemic. You guys were the only show in town. Like at 5 in the morning, KBO would come on ESPN, and that would be what the only sports we had to watch, and some of the only sports in the world that we could have access to. Being a minor league baseball player, like some of the elite players that are in the KBO right now, some of the AA, AAA guys, and even some former major leaguers that are there that played a couple of years in the majors and went over. If they didn't have a major league contract, being in the KBL was definitely something that was advantageous to them financially, because the minors here pay next to nothing. Whereas other professional leagues, you know, if you don't go into the NBA as a basketball player, there are options for you. As a baseball player, like in America or in other places, the options are a bit more limited in that regard to even get back into the major leagues. Do you think that plays a factor too in people's interest?
In the KBO, you mean?
Yeah.
In baseball? For sure. You know, the level of players that are coming over here has gone up in recent years substantially. You used to get, like you mentioned, kind of, you know, AA, AAA, career minor leaguers, playing out the string in the KBO. But in recent years, you're getting guys right off the 25-man, 40-man rosters. There are some players that have GMs and managers wondering, you know, why is this guy playing in the KBO? He's actually too good to be in this league. But, you know, a lot of the pandemic-related uncertainty plays a role. Let me give you an example. Dan Straley, you know, he was a 14-game winner, I think, 1 year with the Cincinnati Reds, had a pretty decent MLB career. He came over, the KBO dominated, he was the best pitcher by WAR last year. And then, you know, there's, you know, persistent rumors that he was going back to the MLB. He had a really good year in KBO, showcased himself really well. And there were a lot of other pitchers, a couple of other pitchers who went their route, you know, pitching in the KBO to kind of reinvent themselves and then go back to the majors. But Australia ended up signing back with the same KBO club at about $1.2 million plus incentives. Now you can maybe question whether he was going to make the similar amount of money in the majors at this point in his career. He's about 32, 33 years old. Probably not, with all due respect. But in the KBO, you know, you get, this is the big leagues in Korea. So you get, you know, you're the number one starter, you get treated like a number one starter. You're the big league guy over here and getting paid over $1 million. So if, you know, if I'm in this position, and I'll probably stay in the KBO too, you know, getting 1.2 million as opposed to maybe waiting out until the start of spring training to get my deal done. So there are you know, a couple of guys that had some major league experience who maybe could have gone back to the MLB in normal times, but not maybe, you know, during the pandemic era, and then they ended up signing back in the KBO.
Yeah, the numbers you're throwing out there, I'm definitely like, give me some of that. I could, is there a broadcaster league over there that I can get into? That would be, as well.
Hey guys, I'm Porter Troop. Subscribe to Expat Hoops on their YouTube channel and listen to them on By George Podcast Network. It's where you can find my interview and a lot of other great interviews, guys. Check them out.
And actually, this is probably a good point to bring it up. I'm trying to find it in my notes, but I could swear, and you can either confirm or deny this from our conversation off the pod. I think you were saying in the early days of the KBL that a lot of those guys were kind of big stars and everything like that. And how is it like now, you know, with the KBL's popularity perhaps going down, you know, are some of the foreign players that coming in, are they still seen as a big deal? Is it being a, you know, a foreign basketball player? What is the experience like for a basketball player in terms of in the community, I guess I should say?
Yeah. You know, there's quite a bit of a following for the NBA in this country. NBA is probably watched a little more than KBL. There's a lot of NBA fans. So, you know, when someone like Jared Solinger comes over, it's a big deal. It's a recognizable name, right? You know, he had a good run with the Boston Celtics and kind of a cup of coffee with the Raptors and all that. So, so it depends on, I guess it depends on the name. If it's, you know, there's maybe a small community of collegiate basketball fans, and if they recognize some former Division One players coming over to the KBL, they get pretty excited. But just that, you know, attendance, you know, KBL has some attendance issues in recent years, and then TV ratings not quite the same that they were in a few years back. So I don't know if KBL foreign players would really move the needle that much, to be honest.
Now, I did find it in my notes, I think, that we talked about it as a basketball had certainly the country's most recognizable stars, I think, back at that time. Biggest household names, guys, the teenage girls would swoon over at arenas. Yeah. That was back in the earlier, this is semi-pro days?
Yeah, this is like semi-pro days, early 90s. This is like 92, 93, 94-ish. And those guys, some of those guys are now coaching in the KBL. So yeah, those are the glory days of basketball in Korea, selling out stadiums. And it also coincided with, I guess, the introduction of NBA to Korean audience. That was when one of the national TV channels started broadcasting on tape delay one NBA game per week. It would be like the game of the week. And then they would show first half highlights and then show the full second half, third and fourth quarters. This is like Friday night, 11 p.m. or something. I remember just staying up and watching it every week because I had, you know, I'd been a fan of an NBA for actually since I was a little younger than that. And I kind of knew about the league thing and from playing some video games. I knew some of the players and all that. And to have NBA basketball on our national TV, this is way before cable. It was a cool thing. And people were exposed to the high level of, you know, basketball. And, you know, Korean basketball being what it was at the time, it was really like the heyday of Korean basketball, like 92, 93, 94-ish. And I remember watching, you know, 93 finals, Suns and the Bulls, live, actually, in Korean time, in the morning hours. because it was actually on national TV. And also the Barcelona Olympics, the Dream Team, got a huge play in Korea among all the sports in the Olympics. Men's basketball was a big deal in Korea just because of, you know, the Dream Team thing, Jordan and his friends, I guess. yeah.
Well, some of them were
Jordan
friends.
Yeah.
Some of them Jordan doesn't have too many friends, especially in the event.
Yeah, even anyway, him and Barkley now are not that good of friends anymore. But you know,
not anymore. Eh? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, must be about golfing a gamble thing or something.
But. Yeah, exactly.
I was going to say, I think it has to do more with the gambling thing than the golfing thing.
Yeah, so that was it. Like, you know, those are some of the top basketball players at the time. They were like rock stars, like BTS of their time. So, but that's in the long past.
I'm Shane LaWallen, and you listen to Expat Hoops. Subscribe to their YouTube channel. Follow them on Twitter and find them on Google and Apple Podcasts on the By George Podcast Network.
Yeah, you know, WKBL, I don't know if you guys followed this year's postseason, but this is a historic, like, playoffs this year. I think the finals ratings just went through the roof.
Oh, wow.
It was really entertaining. Basically, it was the number 4 seed beating number 2 seed. What was number 4 seed upsetting number 1 seed in the first round, and then number 4 seed continuing on and beating number 2 seed in the finals? And, you know, interesting, they talk about how this is a really exciting year because they didn't have a foreign player due to the pandemic. They didn't use any foreign players. So it was entirely Korean homegrown talent on WKBL. And, you know, they eliminated, well, I shouldn't say eliminated, but they didn't have the similar issues that I mentioned on the KBL, you know, kind of, you know, dump the ball into the post and see what happens. That kind of disappeared. There was a lot more action, I think, on the court in a typical game. Maybe less scoring, but, you know, fans got to see more of their, you know, homegrown talent. Players that wouldn't have gotten a chance to play with a foreign player in the mix got to play. And I think some analysts have, you know, talked about how that has contributed to more excitement in the WKBL this year.
It's really interesting. And I know that one of the things that we had talked about previously was that the WKBL used to have huge names, you know, like Tamika Catchings, Shamiqua Holdsclaw.
Yeah, Hall of Famers.
I mean, yeah, exactly. And so that's really interesting that this past year is, not to say that they couldn't, but they just kind of opted to not have people for the pandemic, at least internationals anyway. So that's really interesting. But I mean, is it something that, would you say that pre-pandemic that that the name quality has gone down in terms of the imports, or was it about the same? It's just that the pandemic struck and that was that.
No, I think it's about the same before the pandemic, like in the year right before the pandemic. Even I think we still had this league had the similar quality of international players here, like the players jumping straight in from the WKBL. You know, you talk about the All-Stars and MVPs and Hall of Famers, right? I remember talking to, I mean, this is like 20 years ago, Tamika Catchings and Shamiqua Holdsclaw, and they were talking about how the schedule worked out in a way that it didn't overlap with WNBA at the time. This is when we had the Summer League and the Winter League in the WKBL. So they could actually come in during the WNBA offseason and maybe make a little more money here than they did in WNBA. And I'm sure you guys have read about stories of playing in Russia also. Those players got paid a lot of money too.
A lot of
maybe
money.
So, yeah, maybe WKBL isn't quite up to their level. Well, I don't think anybody is, but you know, they got paid a decent amount of money for playing so few games in the WKBL. And you know, they could come here and dominate also. So I guess it was a lot of fun for them, kind of come in, you know, tower over everybody and shoot over everybody here, and then, you know, average like 25, 20, whatever, and then, you know, kind of get your money and go back to WNBA. So I don't mean to disparage that. I know that, you know, these are professional athletes. They've got to make their ends living. I mean, they got to make their ends meet playing basketball. And hey, if coming over here to play a couple of months is what it takes, then, you know, I guess my hat's off to them.
Yeah, with the women we've talked to on the pod, I brought this up a lot, how many of the best professional players in the U.S. can't quite make the money that they would in a lot of other leagues, especially those that are elite. They go to a place like Russia, but you know, even the WKBL and places like that, they'll pay them more than the WNBA has traditionally paid their players. Now, that has an upside in that they come over there, you know, maybe the competition isn't quite up to the snuff that they're used to. Maybe they have a little bit easier season. They make a lot of money. They bring in fans into the stadium to see them, which is nice for the ownership. But at the same time, a lot of these players are playing 365 days a year. There's no off season for a lot of them. Did you ever have any sort of inclination when they were over there, when you saw some of the best players, were there any injuries that happened that you saw?
There might have been, not that I recall.
Okay.
Any high profile injuries, but yeah, they, you know, something like that could have happened for sure. Like a lot of maybe soft tissue stuff, right?
Yeah, and I know Diana Taurasi famously took off an entire WNBA season just because she, you know, if you're choosing to go to a league that doesn't pay you versus a league that does pay you more, and you're 36, 37 years old, you don't have a lot of time left. You need to rest your body. She took off the time here where the competition was a little bit steeper. So I feel like that's an issue with women's basketball that you definitely, you don't have that in the men so much. And it's a bit risky for them in terms of their careers, because as far as endorsements go, when you have any endorsement deals that they're able to get, most of those are dependent on their time in the WNBA. Though some of them do get some foreign endorsement deals, obviously, from companies that advertise in other nations. But for the most part, when they come here, they're doing their big competition and they're doing their endorsements and they go over there and they get the paycheck. So it's a very odd situation financially.
Yeah. You know, with the WKBL, I don't know if, with all the respect, I don't know if the players had to exert that much energy actually to come here and dominate, so they could probably kind of what's the word I'm looking for?
Coast.
I was gonna say coast, cruise. Yeah. So yeah, coast works.
Coast and cruise. Yeah, they could coast a little bit and still, like, you know, get their points and rebounds and, you know, not risk any injuries. But you know, I don't want to disrespect the Korean players too much.
No, so. I mean, it is what it is. You know, when you're talking about the best of the best in the world of
Like
coming Lauren Jackson. League, it happens.
Yeah, I mean, I think she came here the year after she won the MVP or something like that. And like, not only Chunwa played here recently, and Tamika Catchings, and you know, they were the best players and some of the best players in WNBA. And, you know, they can come here.
They would tear up WNBA teams, let alone WKBL. So.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that's an insult to any WKBL players. I mean, they were tearing up some WNBA players as well. So that's not really a hot take.
Well, makes me feel better.
Yep.
Devin Sweetney. Check out my interview with Expat Hoops on their YouTube channel and listen in using Spotify on the By George Podcasting Network.
It's really significant because in Italian leagues, we've talked with people that they got paid well, but a lot of times, you know, and other leagues that are considered to be somewhat elite, if you get outside of the biggest cities, the facilities themselves are sometimes not quite up to snuff. And we've also had other professional leagues, like even in some Eastern European leagues like Romania, we've talked to players that have played in Iceland. You know, sometimes they're in high school gyms and things like that, playing in the top tier professional leagues in some of the smaller cities teams where they go. So I feel like that's definitely a significant factor in some players' decisions as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, they talk about, like, you know, looking at my virtual background here, TD Ballpark. This is, you know, spring training home of the Blue Jays in MLB. You know, they've been in that town since day one, 1977, and used to be one of the more rundown minor league / spring training facilities. But they've renovated this place. They reopened their training, kind of state-of-the-art training complex. And, you know, they're playing actually major league games in this ballpark right now. And they're saying this is worth investment because, you know, this is where you develop draftees and, you know, young players and minor leaguers. And, you know, people maybe overlook the value of having good training facilities. Like, you know, with the Blue Jays and this in Dunedin, their weight room used to be so small that they used to have to like stagger workout schedules just to make sure, you know, just to make sure that some guys would be able to get their work in, and not, you know, so maybe some of the other players had to kind of wait around outside just because they didn't have any space.
Yeah, that wouldn't have worked to have a full season there.
There's a certain importance attached to having, you know, good training facilities to ensure, you know, player development at the professional level also.
Baseball is back in the Olympics for the first time since 2008. Mm-hmm. Are you going to get to spend any time over there? Are you going to be able to cover the national team? I know that travel restrictions being in place for a lot of people that are foreign fans to Japan is an issue, but first of all, are they allowing any foreign media in? And second of all, are you going to be able to go over and cover that?
Yeah, you know, I'm scheduled to go cover it. I've, along with about a dozen of my coworkers and Yonhap, you know, we are the biggest news agency in the country. So we actually have the biggest press delegation usually, among the print anyway. But we don't know yet about the size of the foreign media because I think they're supposed to reduce the size of foreign media as well. They're not accepting any foreign fans. So we don't know yet what's going to happen to our delegation. But I'm thinking, for me personally, because I'm the only person covering sports in English here, so I don't think I'll be cut even if they reduce the size of the delegation. I think I'll survive the cut.
You're valuable, as they would say.
Well, I don't know about valuable. I'm just, you know, I'm just there. I don't know about valuable. I'm just there. I'm just doing the work that nobody else wants to do. So,
and therein lies your value.
And that's how you ended up on this podcast.
Yes. Yeah. Well. And so I'm supposed to get vaccinated too. And don't know when or if that would happen. I mean, it's not mandatory for Olympic athletes or whoever goes into Tokyo for the Olympics. But it is recommended if vaccines are available in their home countries. And they are available in Korea. So we've applied to, the whole press have applied to kind of, I guess, jump the line to get the shots. Because we need two doses with AstraZeneca. Mm-hmm. So given that sort of the timeline, we're 9,900 days out, we should probably get something, get the first dose maybe.
Yeah,
in the
you
next
gotta
couple
get going.
Weeks.
That cycle for the AstraZeneca, yeah, the how many weeks is it between it?
Yeah, something like that, right? So
I think the Pfizer here is 3 weeks, the Moderna is 4. I'm not aware of the AstraZeneca.
Okay. So even the athletes, they don't know when or if they'll be vaccinated. So there's a lot of question marks on that front. So, I mean, if athletes don't know, then, you know, we probably shouldn't be complaining, right? We're not as important. So,
well, I will say, I know it's might be considered by some a personal question, but I do have to ask, if you do fly over there, would you feel more comfortable if you were vaccinated?
Yeah, personally, yeah. Especially the situation as it is in Japan. It's probably worse than in Korea right now. Mm-hmm. Even in, you know, relative to the overall population, just the rate of infections there, it's probably worrisome at this point. So I'll feel safer to take vaccines first. Of course, there are side effects. You know, my sister, she's a medical doctor. She was one of the first group of people to take vaccines, and she had this really painful body aches the day after. A whole bunch of our coworkers had to actually take the day off because they're just aching all over their bodies. It was so painful. But,
oh wow,
you know, I mean, you know, hey, if that's the price I'm paying for vaccines, I'll take it. So, I mean, but again, that's me personal. I do know there might be some Olympic journalists out there who probably don't want to take it, but, you know, I guess it's their choice.
Yeah. I'm not going to get into that.
Yeah.
That's fraught territory for me. So,
yeah, I was going to say, did you have Pfizer or Moderna, Tony?
I had Pfizer.
Okay. I also had Pfizer, and I actually had arm issues, but, and I read an article after the fact that kind of goes to what your point was about, like, when you went to do deadlifts and everything, that actually was a wise move, because the article said that suggested that you move your arm around and everything like that. But I mean, it just happened to me where it was like a couple days or whatever where my arm was sore, and I was like, wow, my arm is still sore. But would I do it over again? Absolutely.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
So there's my personal opinion. So
there we go. So you'll be covering the national team. South Korea is a qualifier for the Olympics. Officially
the women's.
The women. Oh, wait. Are you talking about softball or are you talking about baseball?
Soccer.
Basketball.
Oh, no, basketball. Baseball. Sorry.
We're in baseball.
We're,
sorry.
We're,
baseball,
yeah, I'm confused. I'm confused. So,
yeah, baseball. Yeah, we're qualified. Yeah. We're going to be up there.
You're qualified in baseball. The women are qualified in basketball.
Yes.
The men are not?
Not yet. Not the yet. Qualifying has not done yet. Yeah.
It's not finished. Okay. So they do they have a chance?
Probably not. I think we're playing Luka Doncic.
So
if he plays, I think we're in the same group.
Oh no, you're playing Croatia? So. That's not good. Is that a must win?
Slovenia, I think, right?
Slovenia. Slovenia. Right. Sorry.
So yeah, I think this is the final tournament or something. One of the last chances, if not the last chance. So if he does decide to play Doncic.
And soccer is part of this one too, right? Isn't it?
Soccer?
Yeah,
Korea qualified.
I was going to say, because I was going to make the joke earlier on. It's like, what's that like to qualify in the Olympics? Because the U.S. men have not.
No.
Well, the thing is, with the men's soccer, there's an age limit in the Olympics, under 23. And you could pick three guys that are over 23. But other than that, it's under 23. Women, there's no age limit in soccer. Korea just lost out to China in the final qualifying event just a couple of days ago. So there was a bummer. But women's volleyball is in, men's volleyball not. Women's basketball, I think we're in the same group as Canada. So we're in trouble too. So,
yeah, that's going to be a problem.
I
did want to ask you too. I'm vaguely aware of this, that this is probably two decades ago that Korea actually was kind of sort of a minor powerhouse in handball. Are you aware of that?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Women's handball.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. We're pretty good, man. We were winning gold.
Yeah. You won some medals
in the Olympics. Yeah. I think we went like four straight Olympics winning a medal.
Yeah.
Against like bigger, faster, stronger European countries. Like you talked about France, Denmark, and Germany, and Russia's. Yeah, Korea was like this pesky, scrappy, little engine that could in handball. But I think the game has caught up to them. This is the physical nature of the sport. I remember I've covered quite a bit of handball in the Olympics too. But just the physical nature of the game has really caught up to this team.
It happens. Happens to the best of us. The physical nature sometimes catches up with some of us quicker other than others. How can anyone who is interested in Korean sports follow you specifically and follow your news organization to get the latest in all of Korean professional sports and otherwise?
Yeah, sure. I'm on Twitter at @jeho_1. That's JEEHO_1 as in numeral one. And I've got the link to my company's website in there, my profile page, so you can click on that. I mostly cover baseball and soccer in Korea and some golf, some write about Korean athletes playing overseas, and during the Olympic years like this year, I do quite a bit of amateur sports as well. So you can find me there on Twitter.
And I've been a personal follower, and also our expat hoops account follows you as well. So not only if you want to look for them, on your own, but if all else fails, look under our account and you'll find him there as well. He's a great follow. I like to read a lot of his work, especially on the KBO. Does really great work, and especially with the Olympics coming up, I'd say is a must follow.
Thank you. But just one note, I'm gonna take a bit of a time off. April to early May. So if you just to let people know that you know, if you don't see any tweets from me in the next couple of weeks, it doesn't mean I've disappeared off the face of the earth. I'm just taking some time off.
And again, working from
social media. So
it has to do with the fact that you've been at your employer for so long, and it's a nice benefit and a nice perk.
It's a good thing. If you don't get fired for 10 straight years, you get awarded for like yep. 16 days off. So,
do you have a board on your wall? Another year without getting fired. Jiho, it's been great to have you on the program today.
Yeah, hey, thank you so much. And it's been a pleasure not only meeting you on the internet and everything like that, but thank you so much for coming on. We really do appreciate it, especially to get the insight. I know that some of our listeners have said something about, like, what is it like for some of the people to be over there in terms of, like, you know, their profile, you know, what are some of the benefits and everything like that. So this really helps not only add on to a couple of the other people that have kind of hit on it, but this really helps, I think, let people know, you know, just basically what you sort of get as an athlete going over there as an import, basically.
Yeah, no, I mean, the pleasure is all mine. I enjoyed this conversation with you guys.